Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Thank you. Welcome. What a great crowd. I'm so happy to see everyone here. This place is almost full, which is nice. Thus I have heard a great man gathered to speak to a crowd in a location, and if I knew your names, I would call them all out. Buddhist sutras begin that way often. Yeah, with the phrase, thus I have heard. The Buddha was teaching at such and such a place, and such arhats and bodhisattvas and assorted strange deities and other beings were there. I won't guess what kinds of beings you are, but you look like people. My eyes sometimes don't see well. This is a really wonderful event. I'm really glad to be hosting it. My name is David Gardner. I teach here in the Religion Department at Colorado College. Teach courses in Buddhism and other things, as well as in Asian studies. And I'm also the co-founder and director of Bodhi Mind Center, a lay Buddhist community in town that's also sponsoring this event, together with the Colorado College National Endowment for Humanities Professorship, which brought Bill Porter, our speaker today, to Colorado Springs and has been funding most of this trip. But Bodhi Mind Center, as well as Springs Mountain Sangha, a local Zen community, has been putting a lot of energy into making sure the events that we've had, this is the third so far, operate smoothly, and that the word has gotten out throughout the town and up and down the Front Range. We have people from Canyon City, from Pueblo. Any other towns represented here? Where?
Santa Fe.
Santa Fe. How is that? Yay! Yeah!
Wow.
We're putting Colorado Springs on the map. This is a really special occasion. I want to introduce to you my friend and a really wonderful person, Bill Porter, in case you don't know him. If you do know him well, you might know him from his pen name, which is Red Pine, which I had read somewhere incorrectly came from, and this is a really nice story, his Zen master at a monastery in Taiwan. Red Pine, you are, young one, you know, and he took it on. But it's wrong. It came from a billboard in Taiwan. He was thinking of a name, and the billboard had an advertisement for a popular Taiwanese cola that was called Black Pine. And he said, that would be a good name, except black is not a very auspicious color, especially in Chinese culture, so he changed it to Red. And that became his name. I'm not sure which story is better, but the latter one is true. And then later on he was reading and found, was it an ancient Taoist master or a poet?
The earliest known Taoist master.
Earliest known Taoist master had the name Red Pine. So his choice was intuitively correct. In thinking about how to introduce Bill today, I thought of a few things, and a few words quickly came to mind. And then I thought, what if I could make them into an acronym? And there were just three words, and I had to go to Google and spend some time there to come up with a good acronym, and there was only one. And I don't say this in order to make a giggle, but it's the only one. And I hope you won't mind, it's ASS. ASS. Bill and I are good friends. I think he can tolerate that one. But we'll leave the joke part behind and move on to the three words. The three words are aesthete, scholar, and sage. Those are the three that came to me. I want to start briefly with aesthete. Aesthete means someone who has a high aesthetic appreciation. And that doesn't just mean for sensual indulgence, although I think on occasion Bill can do that. In fact, he and I did a little bit of it last night, and it was pleasurable. Really, aesthetics means to have a refined appreciation of beauty. And there are different kinds of beauty, some that come from sensory input, but others that come from the mind and higher understandings of the mind, such as knowing poetry, such as knowing philosophy, such as having good friends and enjoying life to its fullest. Aesthetics has many dimensions. It's odd, just this morning I was watching on YouTube a tape from the early 1970s, an interview with William Stegner, any of you know him? Yeah, the great novelist and essayist and environmentalist who taught creative writing at Stanford. And when someone asked him what makes good fiction writing, he said, good awareness of your senses. Good awareness of what is coming in to all of your sensors, apparatuses, or apparati, whatever the plural is there. What you're seeing, what you're hearing, what you're taking in as information. And then to appreciate that and to make story out of it. Those are also aesthetic things. Bill is good at these. He's also a really good poet. He also enjoys all kinds of things. He almost became a monk, as actually I did in the Buddhist tradition as well. He hung out in Taiwanese monasteries. I hung out in Tibetan monasteries. Both of us, when push came to shove, said, no, no, no. maybe in part, in my decision, it was because there was not enough wine, women, and song in the monasteries. I don't know about Bill's case. But wine, women, and song are all things that one can appreciate aesthetically. In the monasteries, they have song. that's all that's available to you. Right? And Bill is a singer as well. If you heard him read poetry recently, he kind of sings it. And as you might know, in many cultures, poetry and song are actually the same word in ancient languages because poetry was sung. Yeah, so his deep appreciation for religion and for literature and for many of the things that he does in life, I think, come under the category of his aesthetic appreciation. Second is a scholar, the A-S, the second letter there. Bill is a renowned scholar. He's not your standard academic in that he didn't take a PhD. He stopped study because he found academic study to be a bit stultifying and other paths to be more enriching. And so he went to Taiwan and studied in a monastery and mastered Chinese, and then started writing kind of because he couldn't do anything else but write. And writing became his career. And if you look at his books with an eye of a scholar, you'll see he's a superb scholar. He not only writes footnotes, which is what scholars are supposed to do, but he writes them well, he does his research thoroughly, he looks at arguments of other scholars and supports them or critiques them based on valid evidence. He also consults some of the finest scholars in the field, many of whom I happen to know as well. And when I read his works and I see that he's consulting people across the United States and Asia and Europe, I see the caliber of his intelligence. And I know that he's friends with many of these people who invite him, as I have, to give talks in Berkeley and in England and here and there. So he's accepted among scholars as a scholar. Although maybe not entirely. Some scholars are snotty and think if you don't have a position or a PhD, you're not a real scholar. But he is, and he's a superb one. He doesn't just write in a scholarly manner. He has an earthy side. He's funny. He makes the material very, very relevant. And yet he can speak with the finest of refinery about fine academic topics. So he's a very well-rounded scholar in the best sense. And if you've read his works, and I think when you hear his talk today, you'll see this combination of scholarship at its best, I think, bringing some of the wisdom of ancient traditions that comes from really hard intellectual work to people in a way that can really touch them and make sense and enrich their lives. And he's dedicated to that in the best tradition of scholarship. Last, I'll call him something that I'm sure he wouldn't call himself, a sage. He knows enough of the classical Chinese traditions to know that this term sets the bar very high. Confucius and many of the ancient Chinese men talked about Emperor Yao and Shun as sages. And maybe Bill hasn't reached that level, I don't know. There are inner domains that are not available to my insight. But he's a sage in the sense of a man that has acquired much wisdom and that shares it with people in a way that's very fulfilling. And I have spent much time with him and know that both from his study and in different ways that he lives, he embodies a deep wisdom that's not just folky. He has a deep sense of what's important and what's not for him, and he follows what's important. And that means pleasure, that means scholarship, that means friendship, that means travel. And I think he finds a lot of beauty in all of those things. And he has a way, as a sage, to combine his aesthetic, his scholarly, and his pursuits of wisdom in a unified manner that's rare among human beings. And I consider myself really honored to be among his friends. And I think you all should feel the same, to be honored to be listening to him here today. Lastly, let me make a brief comment about the text that we'll be discussing today. This is his translation of the Heart Sutra, the Prajna Paramita Hridaya Sutra. Prajna Paramita in Sanskrit means transcendent wisdom or perfection of wisdom. Hridaya, the HRD root in Sanskrit, Hridaya, is the same as the HRT root in English. It means heart, Hridaya Sutra. So it's a discourse on the perfection of wisdom, and I won't go into the content because Bill will discuss that at length today. But perfection of wisdom is a very, very important topic in the Buddhist tradition, arguably the most important. It's said to be something that our minds are able to cultivate at a level of deep intuition, direct knowing of the way that things truly are that is not conceptual. And when one gets beyond language and concept, sometimes via language and concept, but other contemplative routes as well, and learns in a direct and deep intuitive way to see the nature of things as they are and to cut, as the Buddhists say, the roots of delusion, you become free from the suffering that delusion brings us, and you become free to experience the world in a fuller, more engaged, and more compassionate and joyous way. So the meaning of the text, the heart of the perfection of wisdom, is a profound term. It talks about the key to opening up resources of freedom and joy in human life. And that's a really special thing. And this text has served that purpose throughout centuries and millennia of Asian traditions. I am a great fan of this text. In China and Japan, they often copy it and make lots of merit for dead ancestors and things like that. Many of you here are probably a fan of the text, but there's one fan of the text that you probably have not met. This is from Japan, and it has the text printed in it in gold letters. This is a fan also of the Heart Sutra. I'll end on a pun today. And I'm hot. It's also printed on phone cards, it's printed on neckties. It's probably the most copied text in the history of the planet. And so we will have Bill Porter, Red Pine today, aesthete, scholar, and sage, to share with us. I knew that would embarrass him. Maybe you need the fan too. To share with us his great insight into this text. So I really look forward to this. So please join me in giving a warm hand of welcome to Bill Porter.